Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of A Cast to the Past. Today, we got something special for you.
Absolutely. Live and in person, it's...
Me? Oh, I'm Josh.
And me? I'm Tom.
Oh
my gosh.
Wow, it's so weird that we're actually in one place together.
Right? For real. Oh, yeah, we braved the apocalypse of the end of America to come and do an in-person episode, because we may not ever have a chance again with all these people bringing the second wave on, am
yeah,
I right?
We don't know. So, no, don't touch me. No. Today's topic episode is, does a perfect game exist? Mm-hmm. And if so, what is it?
Yes. So, in exploring this very subjective question, we're going to be approaching it like so. We're going to talk about our standards for gaming perfection, you know, what we hold the game up to say, oh, that's perfect. We're going to talk about the history of what's considered, like, a perfect game, you know, the critically acclaimed all-timers. And then finally, we're going to each throw out three games that we think meet this very high bar.
Right. So, what we're going to do first, and we're going to have Tom, if you want to take it away, tell me how you came up with a game that's perfect. What is your criteria that you look at from a gaming perspective to make it perfect? And a perfect game does not mean it needs to be 10 out of 10, 5 out of 5, 100%, anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's everything that hits your personal criteria.
Of course, because this is a very personal topic, and yeah. You're probably going to disagree with some things, but hey, that's great. Tell us what you think in the comments afterwards.
I disagree with a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I disagree with you like all the time. No.
Yeah, exactly.
We hate each other.
That's why it works so well.
I know. But so I got four criteria that I kind of hold the game to.
Okay.
The first is the design of specifically, you know, its mechanics. Is this a game that whatever its gimmick is, does it do the gimmick well?
Okay.
Two is user interface. How well does the game let me learn it, and how well does it, like, you know, let me interact with its world? You know, is it a nice, clean, polished game with no HUD and that's done on purpose? Or if it's, you know, very like a menu-driven game, how easy is it for me to navigate said interface?
Yeah.
Three is story. Now, like, I don't mean like a game has to have like the most complex, over-the-top story in the world. Simple stories are great too. But if a game is complex, is all that work for something? And then finally, pacing. You know, is the game the length it needs to be? Is it overstuffed with crap to pad it out, or is it shorter than it should be? Is replayability there? And if so, is that a good thing? You know, these are all factors of pacing for me. So that's my four goals.
Okay.
What about you, Josh? What is your standard?
So, gameplay, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Does it play well? Is it something that you can constantly go back to, or do you not even need to go back to it? You know what I mean? There's games that you can experience one time and be completely satisfied with your outcome to it that you don't need to go back to it. Like, it's so perfect, why ruin it?
Sure.
Music in a game, does it slap? And the answer is yes for all my titles. The music for games really are a standout. When you are playing through the game, like, does it, you know, immerse you more? Like, into that world. And a good example of that is, like, Breath of the Wild. There's not much music in that game, but when it hits, you are so, like, prepared for whatever is going to come. Breath of the Wild, the best thing is when you're walking up the Hyrule Castle towards the end of the game and the original themes and stuff like that. It's such a slow build, but as you're going, you're like, I'm going to complete this journey. And, like, that's one of those things that sends goosebumps up your body because, like, it's so epic and so impactful. And then the last one is just, like, the mainstay appeal. Like, how does this game, like, has it aged well? You know, is it something that you can go back to and is timeless, pretty much, is the best way to look at it.
Okay.
So gameplay, music, and is it timeless enough to be able to have such a story impact that you can tell your friends about it and get them to go into it? Because you don't want to say, like, hey, you should play this Carmen Sandiego game from the 80s. And then only be stuck with knowledge from up into the 80s. Like, it's not something.
What did President Reagan say about this?
Exactly.
And some Gen Z kids, like, who's Reagan? So, all right.
You mean Ronald Reagan? The actor?
You mean Ronald McDonald? I know what you're doing, though. All right. So, those are our standards. So, let's talk real quick about games that are considered perfect, the ones you see at the top of lists all the time all over the internet.
Right.
Like, you know, which ones do you think are on those lists justifiably, and which ones are you kind of like, for me, nah, you know, like, What do you think?
So, on the top of the list, I know everyone always talks about Mario Brothers 1, Mario Brothers 3, Legend of Zelda.
The Nintendos are usually all over these lists.
Yeah, they really are. And there's a quality that's behind all of them.
Oh, absolutely.
You can dig deeper into World of Warcraft. You know, people talk about Pong as well. Doom is one that shows up on a lot of people's lists. Fallout 3 is another one that shows up. Final Fantasy 7.
Yeah, like, so, I mean, right, these are the big names that we, and I think a lot of the people know, you know, and just floating through some of those, it's like, there's games on there, and it's like, I get it. Like, Pong's there because it's probably the first burst into mainstream game.
Right.
And again, simple design and simple user interface for like from me, like that anyone can jump into that. It's yeah. It's basic. It's air hockey, you know. And then Mario Brothers. Look, like I'm sure, like as game design education has been growing, that's probably one of the first like courses anyone teaches you, because everything about that first level is built into teaching you how to play the game. There's a block there, and it's for the user to go, oh, what happens if I jump under that block? And then the rest of the course is laid out like that.
Right.
Are there any, you know, just things like that. I was going to ask you, are there any games from these big timer lists that, like, you see on there and you're like, that?
Like, that kind of, like, make me, like, cringe? No, I mean, they all really do have a particular, like, reason for being there.
Sure.
There's some games that are like, I don't know if you would really go that route to it.
Like, you know, just to be frank, we're looking at some notes that we took from, like, lists that we were scouring. Yeah. We're looking at them right now.
Like,
so, like, all right, we both noted Star Fox from the Super Nintendo is on here.
Yeah.
Look, you can't play that game today without your eyes bleeding.
Right. So at the time, it was revolutionary, you know, for what that console could do. But it's one of those things. Yes, it looked great back then, but now it's just a mesh of polygons together. And yeah. that's a problem with the PS1 in general. It's just a blended mess of polygons everywhere, and it was ugly. And another one that makes it on the list, and I'm going to probably get a lot of hate for this, GoldenEye is on this list.
I have fond memories of GoldenEye.
Exactly.
Impactful for its time.
Exactly.
Has it aged well?
No.
On its original console? No.
Exactly.
Like, you could play great mouse and keyboard versions of GoldenEye, but, you know, it's rough.
Yeah,
it's
very rough around the edges.
Let's go down a little further, talk about some, like, 2000s options.
Yeah, so we go into the 2000s. There's a bunch of games on here that I don't think really should be on the list. I don't think, like, Beyond Good and Evil is. I think that's just a really weird... I don't understand people's, like, hook for that game.
Sure. Kingdom Hearts was on a bunch of them, and, like, I like that franchise. It's got a fond place in my past. I love the creativity behind it, but, like, specifically the First Kingdom Hearts has a very clunky combat system, some stilted voice acting, and weird linear level design. I wouldn't consider that perfection, you know, but I get why it's beloved, but, like, the first one, no.
So, my thing is, the Kingdom Hearts games shouldn't. The only reason the Kingdom Hearts games are as popular as they are is because Disney. Those games would fail hardcore if Disney wasn't included with those games.
Of course, because then the appeal isn't there. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But looking, Wii Sports, I understand why that's on the list. Guitar Hero, I understand that. Psychonauts, not really sure
not
why that's on the list. Like, when you compare it to all these other games, like, it's just not a standout one really for me.
I think something we also have to acknowledge, Josh, is that we're also looking at, like, in collecting these titles from lists, a critical acclaim upon initial release,
mm-hmm.
you know, also played into why these games have their reputations. And like you said, timelessness, you know,
yeah.
A game could have been lauded when it came out, like GoldenEye, but now it's 2020. Did it hold up to time?
All people do is, I remember playing it with my friends. I remember. You remember it.
Yeah, and that's good.
But you still don't.
Right.
Like... There's a difference between remembering GoldenEye and going back and playing the original Metal Gear Solid.
And hey, look, I'm guilty of this. I have nostalgia goggles for several things,
mm-hmm.
you know, but as we've tried to, like, you know, through this podcast, become a little bit more, like, open-minded gaming historians,
mm-hmm.
we gotta acknowledge this stuff, you know.
Yeah, and one thing I really do like seeing with the list here is, as we progress through the years, more and more indie titles made it onto the list.
Absolutely. You know, Braid, Journey.
Limbo. Spelunking's on there, Inside's on there. There's a lot of other games.
Little mom and pop game called Overwatch, you know, indie titan.
I mean, Witcher 3, I've never even heard of the first two games.
it was completely overlooked that game.
Yeah, Super Meat Boy's on the list.
Yep, and deservedly so,
Right. And the funny thing is a lot of these games we've talked about in the past. So now what we'll do is we're going to dive in a little bit to our picks for what we consider perfect games. Absolutely. And why we consider them the perfect game. So
Josh, you know, you're hosting me in your home. Well, yeah. I'd love for you to like share a game with me first. You know, so kick us off.
I will kick off with something that we've talked about in the past. And actually, I think two of the three of my games we've talked about in the past already. So I will start with one of my, I guess, go-to games to always talk about with people. And that is Shovel Knight.
Yes. We have a full episode on it. You should definitely check that out on the podcast streams, link in the description. But Josh, why don't you tell me how this met your standards for perfection?
So this not only is timeless when it comes to the gameplay to it, it reminds you of the best games that we've talked about in the past. It reminds you of Super Mario. It reminds you of Super Mario Bros. 3. It reminds you of Legend of Zelda. It reminds you of NES DuckTales. It reminds you of Mega Man. It reminds you of all these classic franchises put together in an awesome story that's so minimal that you are so invested in all the characters in this game. Followed by an amazing soundtrack by Jake Kaufman. Like, it is an amazing soundtrack that I have on all of my music streaming services. It's one of those things, like, when I'm working out, I'll listen to Strike the Earth, because that is just such a pump-up song that you know that you're going to start this adventure. Being able to play the game on all different consoles and getting different experiences with all of them. The PlayStation version, you get Kratos. The Xbox version, you get the Battletoads. The Wii version, Wii U version, Switch version, whatever, you had co-op mode to it. Now you get a lot of that in all of them, but it's so awesome that this game that started off as a Steam and Wii U game just blossomed into this mega release, and it was still pumping out DLCs to the beginning of 2020. And it's so awesome that all those DLCs were given to us for free, and they're almost full games inside of them too. So it feels good, it looks great. It makes me constantly go back to it. And like I said, the music to it just makes you so invested in that world. And the characters are lovable, even though you're supposed to hate them. They're all so lovable because they're all just full extremes of what their characters actually are.
I agree with you on basically the majority of those points, just because I also was like sucked into Shovel Knight when I picked it up. So yeah, I can see everything why you think that's an essential perfect piece of gaming history. Oh yeah. Totally down with that.
And it was an indie game. It was a Kickstarter game.
That's the Kickstarter like gold standard.
Yeah, you know it really is.
It's not a Mighty Number 9.
It could be.
It could have been.
You don't want that.
Nope.
So what is your first game to show me?
Well, the first game, it's one I've talked about on the podcast, I think, a couple times. And, you know, I very openly believe that this is the best video game ever made. Okay. And it's like, when you talk about perfection, it was like, well, no, I'm going to talk about Portal. So here's the thing about Portal and all my criteria. Like I said, mechanics, the portal hopping mechanics are beautifully realized, and user interface, you know, through user interface and story, just like combined, all these things are tied together. You're thrown into this game, and because you're like, you know, in story, you're a confused kind of amnesiac patient in a medical facility or some kind of science lab, you know, Aperture Science, yep. But I'm just saying, the tutorial section are tests built into this lab. So it's this perfect, like, why am I learning this? Because the game's telling, like, there's a reason for learning this, and you learn it very quickly, and you learn it step by step. And then by the time you start getting into the hard levels, you know how to do it and how to adapt. And then the game respects you enough to be like, all right, now you're going to be more on your own, and you got to be more on your toes. And then deeper into the story complement, when the twist of the game hits, you're even more on your own, but like the story works and makes sense, And like I said, simplicity of this story, it's you wake up in a lab and you don't know what's going on, and then you slowly start realizing something's not right. And then when you get to the climax and realize what this has all been about, it's a malevolent AI testing you because it hates humans and everything, and it all comes together and you have to defeat it. It's just this the neatest bow on top of everything. And then pacing. Portal's a game you can complete in a nice Sunday afternoon, you know, beginning to end. And then replayability? It's totally on you to, like, if you want to go back and try to, like, do things a little faster. There was a free expansion release called Portal Still Alive, where it's just, like, kind of time trial versions of new lab rooms, so they give you options to kind of play around outside of the boundaries of the story. So, yeah, Portal is just, like, the perfect package in terms of gaming. Good idea, interesting story, great to play, and great to replay. And that's why I think, like, no game has been as perfect as Portal since 2007.
Yeah, when you're talking about the tutorial level to that, I thought of Portal 2, and I really like Portal 2 over Portal 1. But 3/4 of the way through the game, you learn a new mechanic, and then the game has to reteach you that towards the end of the game, and it gets really annoying. And that is one nice thing, I think, with Portal 1. I think I like Portal 2's story more than Portal 1, but Portal 1, for the type of impact that it had, I think has a more mainstay appeal than Portal 2 does.
Don't get me wrong, I love Portal 2 as well, because it's more Portal. What's not to love?
Right.
But I do agree with you, like, especially in that mechanic, the gels and everything, it comes way too late in the game, and it does interrupt the flow a little bit.
Right.
So, yeah.
It slows it down.
That's
to
what
crawl.
It's an A minus, whereas Portal 1's an A plus.
Okay. And, I mean, has a catchy catchphrase.
Mm-hmm.
Cake is a Lie.
Yep, iconic.
Has an awesome song, Still Alive, which you can play in Rock Band.
Oh, you can.
So, I mean, there's always good
stuff.
What
more could you want?
Right.
But Josh, I want more from you. So what's next on your perfect game lineup?
So we talk about trifecta of, you know, games and stuff like that. And I know in the podcast we talked about a game that had an Avengers-style grouping of a team of unlikely people to create a game called Chrono Trigger.
Yes. The winner of our first ever March Madness tournament in 2019. You can check out that episode in the feed's description.
Chrono Trigger, I mean, what more can you talk about? You know, if everyone talks about what's the greatest Super Nintendo game of all time,
it's Chrono Trigger.
What's one of the greatest games of all time? Chrono Trigger. Everyone talks about how amazing Chrono Trigger is. It did time travel in a way that's understandable to everybody, that's enjoyable. It has RPG mechanics that aren't ridiculous when it comes to making sure your team is ready for any type of fight. You can end the game 1/4 of the way through the game if you want, if you're really good at it, but you probably won't be able to. It has a wonderful cast of characters. The music is so on point. The music hits the right notes on every timeline that you're in, on every town, every city, every battle that you're in. It's just such a perfect game. Like, if there was a 10 out of 10 ranking, this would be a 69 out of 10 because it's nice.
Nice.
I can't really say any more than what we have in the previous episode about Chrono Trigger, but, like, it's one of those games that's just, it just feels so right to play. Like, I can't find any flaws with that game.
It was an incredible experience. It's like I said in our episode, it's a game that I bought on multiple, you know, consoles and systems just because, like, I love this, you know. And when you were saying, like, one of your standards for gaming is music, I was like, well, you know, Chrono Trigger, besides the fact that I could see it on the desk, Chrono Trigger is going to be on here because the soundtrack of that game is, when we talk about slaps, this slaps you so hard you're unconscious, you
right.
know? It's sublime. But yeah, wonderful cast of characters, great story, paced really well too, you know, like this, it's, I love it because it's an episodic kind of story where, like, you complete little arcs every time you travel through time and they feel like you're binge watching something, but you're not binge watching. You're an active participant in this adventure.
That is the best way to describe Chrono Trigger too, is picture each era that you go to or each thing as its own, like, episode or as its own season of a TV show or something like that. It is so well paced that it does feel like you're watching a movie or watching a TV series over the course of time. And this came out in 1995 when you had games like Yoshi's Island and Warcraft 2 come out. Like this game that was just, you know, a small mom and pop, you know, company named Square Enix just dropping this on the store shelf. And it, I mean, it's just perfect.
It is. It is perfect. It's pretty dang good. It's pretty dang good. So the next game that I think also think is pretty dang good is 2007's Bioshock.
Oh.
Yes. The underwater dystopian Ayn Rand rebuttal. You know, this, in terms of my standards, we got to start, you know, with story. This isn't just a really well thought out sci-fi tale about, you know, political and personal corruption and warning about the dangers of experimenting with things beyond man's reach. It's also a brilliant meta commentary on the user game experience, you know, like how we as users are trained to be kind of active and passive in the gameplay experience.
Right.
And when the famous twist in the middle of this game, the would you kindly, spoilers for a 13-year-old game, but when you find out that like the main character had a trigger word that was making him do everything he was doing, i.e. you, the gamer, were like being given an objective and going to do it, it's just this beautiful commentary about how games guide you through their stories. And as a gameplay, you know, it's a first person shooter, but it's experimenting with like, you know, giving you superpowers and things like that through, you know, the atom that you inject into your arm, and very well, like, you know, implemented and introduced. You get the lightning atom and you're instantly put into areas with water, and you kind of are like, you know, water conducts electricity. So you get to experiment with frying, you know, some baddies alive. And then that builds up to the boss where you fight him in a doctor's office that has a leak. So you're just like, wait for him to get in a puddle and boom. So like, and that's throughout the game. Pacing wise, there's not a moment wasted in my opinion. User interface, everything's really well laid out. Puzzles and menus you have to navigate are fairly easy to get through in my opinion without too much hassle. And yeah, it's just a story that's carried very well by the design of its narrative and its world and how it lets you explore them. So that's a perfect game in my book.
So you say this is considered a perfect game. Do you think it's better than Infinite though?
Infinite does bigger things with its narrative, but Infinite suffers from how its world is designed in my opinion. Bioshock, the OG, is great in that it takes place within these very narrow and confined undersea dome worlds.
There's more of a horror aspect to this.
So the combat is like panicky and frantic because you could get locked in a corner at any time.
Okay.
Infinite, because it's in big open areas, like the combat's really uneven because like you could get so far across like an arena from an opponent that like they can like disengage or you can pick them off too easily. Yeah. So Infinite suffers in its combat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do really like the first Bioshock. I bounce back and forth between which one's better. Is it Infinite? Is it the first one?
Well, you know what? It's not.
We know it's definitely not two.
It's not two.
But I love the music to the first Bioshock and I will give it major props, though. There's a lot of covers in Bioshock Infinite that really just tug on my heartstrings. Oh, they're just so good. I would have to probably give it to Bioshock 1 because, like you were saying, it's such a confined area. It's more of a horror and an action game put together rather than a political thriller action game that
sci-fi, Infinite is. Sci-fi, time travel-y,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think there's really nothing more that you would need to say about Bioshock at all.
Yeah, that's the definitive word. No critic ever needs to write an article about Bioshock again. Tom Peeler took care of it for you. So, Josh, you have a final game that I need to hear the final word on.
Yes. So, it is the perfect platforming game ever made. Super Mario World.
That is the best 2D Mario. I will say that, yeah.
The perfect platforming game. The levels are perfectly placed. The music effing slaps is the best way. It introduced us to the Yoshi mechanic, introduced us to the great Koopa kids that we have. There's so many awesome things. It's one of the best Mario designs that we have in a game as well. The secrets that are inside the game, all these things have transitioned over to other Mario games. And this is where it started. And this game still holds up to this day. Like, I will still go back and play this game nonstop, whether it's on cartridge form or if it's on the Super Nintendo Classic or the SNES games for the Switch, anything along those lines. Super Mario World is the perfect platforming game. And I love Celeste. I love Shovel Knight. I love The Messenger. But none of them can compare to how perfect of a game Super Mario World is.
I gotta give it to you. You know, like, there's two 2D Marios that I love. It's Super Mario Brothers 2 and World. But, like, you gotta give the edge to World in just between those two because, you know, Mario Brothers 2, not an actual from-the-ground-up Mario game. So World, you know, all the love and detail that was put into that, super admirable. And yeah, colorful, poppy art style, just the most charming soundtrack, great levels. Yeah, I agree with you completely. I would say in terms of 2D Mario platforming, it's pretty good and a great choice. A great choice.
Thank you. Thank you. But I, you know, go ahead and I talk about my game here, but what is yours? I don't see it over there. So well, I feel like it's a game that I don't own.
Yeah, BioShock's covering it. No, it's, oh. I mean, you know, oh. It's like, yeah, while we're on the topic of Mario, just in terms of recent gaming history, and 3 years, I'll have to be 3 years old as of this year, so we could potentially do a full episode on this. Josh, I just realized we can do an episode on Breath of the Wild.
Wow.
But speaking of this and Breath of the Wild, so Breath of the Wild, you know, masterpiece, good game, but it went, again, by my Mount Rushmore of criteria, Odyssey really meets it. Now, even if this were to perchance be your first Mario game, we're talking about mechanics and user interface. The way that this game, you know, drops you in its opening a world and lets you explore and lets you learn is beautiful, especially with the addition of the Cappy enemy, you know, mind control mechanic. Super well implemented, you know, the world of the hats, which I'm not remembering right now, but this video clip will say the title.
Yep.
It's these nice big open spaces for Mario to jump around and run around in, and then you've got the hills to learn how to roll down, and then you got elevated platforms to jump, and then you've got this nice linear course to learn mind control, and then when you finally set out across that power line for your first adventure, you've completed your introductory course to Mario, and you didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
Story? Super simple, same crap as always Mario. Bowser is trying to forcibly abduct Peach and, without her consent, marry her, which apparently is still acceptable, just like getting weirder and weirder as time goes on. And, you know, it's hero saving someone they love from someone who's doing something morally wrong.
Right.
That's universal.
Right.
And then replayability, here's the cool thing, and pacing. And then replayability and pacing, here's the thing about Mario Odyssey. There are a generous amount of the power moons that are easy enough to get for kind of like new tier intro level gamers, and as well as stars that are there for like the seasoned pros. You only need 120 power moons to beat like the mainline narrative. Yep. Of stop Bowser, get through that incredible closing level, and save the day. So, you know, again, if this is your first Mario game, you can do it, and it's, you know, it's possible and you can be the hero and that's great. But if you want to keep going, there's so much more in this game for you to check out. And these levels are so big and open with unique things to look for and discover that, again, there's a lot to go back for. I've gone through this game kind of in two phases so far. It was the initial buy and playthrough. And then, you know, I took a couple months off and then picked it up again and decided, oh, I want to like clean up, increase my power moon count. And again, I didn't even finish it. I've not like 100%ed Mario Odyssey, but I know there's stuff to go back to because it's a generous game.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, like, you know, in terms of recent history, that's probably perfection in my book.
Yeah, I won't agree with you on that one because I'm not a huge fan of Mario Odyssey. I like the more level-based Mario games, very similar to Mario 3D Land.
Okay.
I think those are a little bit more my style of gaming. I appreciate the nomination for it as a great game. It was fun, my time playing through it. I think the best part of it really was that final level where there's a big spoiler where you can turn into a certain character and it's just awesome. That was like worth the whole playthrough. There's times I felt really annoyed with the mechanics of how Mario controls, and that just goes back to Mario 64 and it was just the way that it is. I don't know. There's just something about those games that just feel so dated.
Okay.
Mechanic wise.
Sure. I get you. I know it's not your cup of tea, but just, you know, the way that
I respect
it stacks up, you know, that's just for me.
I respect it.
All right.
So I want to add one last game to all of this. And it's one that I think all gamers can unify together and agree and admit that this is the perfect video game of all time. All
right, what is it?
Tetris.
Oh.
It's mathematically the perfect video game.
Well, it's the reason why the Game Boy was such a runaway hit. It's the reason why, like, yeah, Tetris, like, I feel like I could take a picture of Tetris to any country on this planet, and somebody would be able, even no matter what the language barrier, would, like, get it. Yeah, even with my criteria, story, get rid of blocks. Pacing, whenever you want to stop.
Music.
No, for real.
It's so iconic. But it is one of those things that it's still releasing to this day in different fashions, and it's perfect every single time.
Yeah. There's a version of Tetris out there for you, no matter what you're looking for.
Like, you have the original Tetris. You have Tetris 2. You have Tetris Plus, which came out on the PlayStation, which was a story-based Tetris game, which was awesome.
If you need that, yeah.
You have Tetris Effect, which came out on the PlayStation 4, which was like a mind-blowing version of Tetris, which is also included in a VR version of Tetris. You have Tetris 99 for the Battle Royale people out there.
There you go.
Who love those fork knives and loves those payment legions.
League of Payments?
League of Payments.
It's not a Battle Royale game, but I know what you're doing.
Yeah. But there is a version of Tetris out there for everybody, but the game... The amount of blocks, the amount of different pieces in it, the game is mathematically perfect. There's nothing wrong with that game. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I will defend Tetris as being the perfect video game to the end of days.
It's like, you know, cards or checkers or chess. Yeah, I get what you mean. It's one of those simplistic things. I think like in 100 years... people are going to be playing Tetris, you know, in old folks' home, you know, like, because it's just the universal appeal of it, undeniable.
You can play Tetris on anything.
Yeah, it's available everywhere.
Like, there's a version out there for, you can even play it on Linux.
If, you know, hey, hi, Linux users, thanks for watching. Now, bear in mind, through all this, these are just three examples from us. We know this is super subjective.
Yes.
And we would love to hear what you think qualifies as gaming perfection. So please tell us in the comments or, you know, in any of our socials. We want to know, what do you think is perfect and what are your standards?
Yeah, what do you consider not only a perfect game, but what are your criteria to making a game perfect too? Like, did we miss something huge actually include on, you know, saying like, well, Chrono Trigger could be better because of this? Then, you know, we're open to any and all ears and text and comments.
However you want to communicate.
But until next time, this has been Josh
and Tom,
and we'll see you in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.